This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Your number is 877-217-5757, and our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. The world has changed dramatically in the last few days, and in some cases the last few hours. Today's story in the Advocate front page from Sam Carlin: alarmed by the community spread of the new coronavirus that has made Louisiana a hotspot nationally for the pandemic and killed three so far, officials put in place a dizzying array of new restrictions on Monday that promised to disrupt life for virtually every citizen, ordering bars, gyms, and casinos to close and banning gatherings of 50 or more. The stunning move made by Governor John Bel Edwards was the latest in a string of escalating restrictions that have been put in place continually since a week earlier when the first case was discovered in Louisiana. 877-217-5757, and we're joined in studio by the General. Before we talk with him, a reminder that there will be a panel discussion today on coronavirus at 1 p.m. on WRKF, and the Governor will have his monthly radio program tomorrow, 2 p.m., tomorrow, Wednesday, the 18th. Today's the 17th day of March, St. Patrick's Day, 41st birthday for President Trump's former lover, Stormy Daniels. General Russell Honoré, what's your take? You call it the invisible enemy. What's your take on where we are right now?
Well, we're in the middle of a disaster. And we're going to have to be and change our culture a little bit in America, because in the middle of a disaster that we don't see an end to, we're going to have to change our culture. We are instant gratification, instant solution community in America. That's how this tribe was built. And we're going to have to learn how to deal with ambiguity and uncertainty.
That's
what wars do. That's what wars do, because the enemy has a vote. In this case, an invisible enemy, the things that we do know will tell you the solution is in us, the people you look at in the mirror when you wake up in the morning. And the only one going to save us is us. It's not a government program that'll do it. It's us. And the actions we take that's been recommended by the government to isolate, if you're sick, stay home, call your doctor, seek treatment. If you're elderly, stay home, break contact with the outside world. And use this opportunity to look out for others on your street. Organize your street. Know who your neighbors are from 6 feet away. And figure out how you borrow a cup of sugar again. Because we may be into that. We may be at a point where we can't buy store-bought bread. You know what? I grew up very seldom having store-bought. My mama made bread. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to digress to that point of the conversation. But what our sergeants taught us when we came in the Army, adapt and overcome, son. Because you're going to have to be able to live with what you got, not what you want.
Live with what you got, not with what you want. Now, in 1918, we had a pandemic in the U.S. and the world with the Spanish flu. John Barry, the author of the definitive book about that, was on this program 3 weeks ago. And we talked much about how the country reacted to that and ultimately got through it. But, oh, by the way, 1918, the U.S. won a world war, too. We won a war abroad, a world war, and we also conquered a pandemic. So we've been through tougher times than this.
And we were living through a depression. Visualize soldiers being trained at Fort Raleigh, sent to the East Coast, put on ships, and die en route to the war. What we didn't know then is we didn't have that instant information. When we saw ships coming in last week with cruise ships, people were Skyping on national media. Mm-hmm. And that increased information has helped, but it has also caused people to want to go into the panic mode. But think about if we were in this situation as they were in World War One, with the president sending troops to go fight on a foreign soil and in essence taking the virus with them, and they're dying en route to the battlefield. America, we got to raise our pants up, put our big boy pants on, take care of one another, because it's been a lot harder, and our ancestors survived it. We got to toughen up, we got to look out for one another, and we got to follow the rules of social distance and isolation and take care of our elderly.
General Russell Honore is with us, 37 years U.S. Army, a Louisiana treasure and hero, and he's giving us some advice, and he's been through a lot in his career. He's fought a couple of wars and has lived to survive and talk about it, and he, of course, was there at Katrina when times were uncertain. But each enemy is different, and as he stated, this is an invisible enemy, and how do we handle it? 877-217-5757. Today on this radio station from NPR, there was a story, a poll showing that 76% of those who identify themselves as Democrats believe this is a serious situation, a crisis, while only 40% of Republicans in the U.S. believe it's a crisis. We have this enormous division in our political landscape that appears to penetrate every fabric, every facet of life, General. How do we get past that?
You know, I've come upon that same observation, and I tell my friends, I wrote a note a couple of days ago on Facebook, that we need to move on. This is a no-kidding disaster. This pandemic will kill you. And many of them have been writing and sending notes back, thinking it's made up by the media, and it's not media hype. This is real. Look at the numbers in Louisiana and what we've occurred in the last week only. This is real. This has nothing to do with, I'm a political type of guy. This has nothing to do with one party wishing or thinking the other party. Anytime we have a disaster, the opposition party is going to speak up. Get over it. That's what happens in a democracy. But now is the time for us to have unity in our government. But the fact that people have been saying, I mean, I didn't make this up on national television, that this was a hoax. We may have lost some time. But I'm a look-forward kind of guy. We're not going to fix this, drive this bus out of the ditch looking through the rearview mirror. We've got to look to the future and figure out how we're going to help one another and get our industry to get involved to find solutions to this problem.
877-217-5757 for General Russell Honore, and we will go to the phones in short order. Local health providers, this is a story from Terry L. Jones in today's Advocate. In East Baton Rouge Parish, have joined forces to open a drive-through testing center at Baton Rouge General's Mid-City campus for coronavirus. But because testing kits are still limited, not just anyone can pull up and be administered a test. This is from Mayor President Sharon Weston Broom. Tests will be administered weekdays between 1 and 3 p.m. and only for people who have contacted their primary doctors first and gotten a signed order to be tested for COVID-19. 877-217-5757. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you start the conversation with General Honore. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, General. And I know the general from Point Coupee. My grandfather was from Point Coupee. Just a question. You know, we've been through a lot of wars and a lot of tragedies and things like that. Do you think this division, you know, Republican, Democrat, conservative, Republican, will kind of will lessen itself when everybody got a little skin in the game? And, you know, yesterday the announcement came out that the Diocese of Lafayette closed all the churches. There will be no mass until April 13th. Do you think it's a time we really need? Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Well, let's speak to that a minute. I think we're doing this because we got a public health scare. I've seen friends on Facebook said, oh, this is just a hoax, and they want to take over our rights, and they're using this as an instrument. That's BS. And as far as church, listen to the Pope, listen to our pastors, listen to our bishops. We can pray at home. This is not going to stop us from praying. We go to church as a team to listen to inspiration from from the minister. But you can go online now and hear some of the best sermons you've ever heard, and not miss your getting your church on. So I think we need to use this as an opportunity, and it's going to create a cultural shift. Listen to our leaders. Don't demonize those who are trying to do what's right, because you may not believe in it, but it is real. Just look what's happening in Italy right now. And this has the potential of happening here because we're a few weeks late. The problem is we need to move forward, and we need to, as the sergeant said, adapt and overcome, soldier.
Yesterday at the Baton Rouge Press Club, which did meet, I'm proud to say, and Colonel Strickland from the Veterans Office in Louisiana was there, head of Veterans Affairs, and Reverend Chris Andrews delivered a prayer. He was there, and he said the word fear is mentioned in the Bible 365 times, and you take that acronym, F-E-A-R, and you can either fear everything and run, or you can face everything and rise. And that is a destructive emotion, General Honore. It's not something that generally we get good things from when we're afraid. What was it Franklin Roosevelt said? We have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Absolutely.
And most people who get this will be survivors. It's just the case in which the way the landscape is now, we know more people have it than we're aware of at this point. And the hospitals could be overwhelmed, and the tragedy is that doctors and other health professionals might have to choose who lives and who dies.
Right. And that social distance is real. Just beware of your friends who discount this and really want to shake hands. Step back from them.
Mm-hmm.
Step back from them, and you lead. This is not something we've got to do because they don't believe in the virus. Do what's right. Step back from them. And protect yourself and your family.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with General Honore.
Yeah, General, can this dichotomy and attitude toward the coronavirus be explained by a concomitant attitude toward anything like global warming that would cost the powers that be part of their profits to deal with?
Absolutely. We're going to need a cultural shift to deal with this virus. And we're going to need a cultural shift to stop warming up the atmosphere, which is causing the ice cap to melt and the rising sea level. I think the future we feared is here. For years, scientists have been telling us the impact of global warming. And in 2004, I participated as a member of Homeland Security and Commander Joint Force Headquarters Homeland Security. And we did an exercise, Jim. And in that exercise, we determined we didn't have enough ventilators and respirators and hospital beds. 2004, how many presidents that is ago? We knew that.
Mm-hmm.
CDC knew it. HHS knew it. The Congress knew it. And we did nothing. So here we are today, facing that future we feared is here. And we're trying to play catch up. But I think American history, looking forward, can get this problem solved. We've got to pull the right triggers. We've got to give them the resources they need and the authorization to go build ventilators and create respirators. But what will reduce that demand is the things that our leaders are asking us to do. Stay home. Yeah. Essential people. We got to keep the supply chain open. We got to keep the trucks moving. We got to keep the pharmacy and the grocery stores open. We've got to keep the power on. What happens if the people in energy don't go to work and the power goes out? We got to be able to have the air conditioning guy come out and fix your air conditioning. So we got to keep the supply chain and the service industry open. The rest of us need to stay home.
877-217-5757. If you get a busy signal, be patient. We do have a lot of people who wish to talk to General Russell Honore. And please make your remarks as brief as possible. And please turn down your radio, Mitchell and Glen Oaks. Please turn down your radio. You're on the air with General Russell Honore. Hi, Mitchell.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Good morning.
I just want to say, our leader, when you have a leader saying this is going to be over in 15 days, telling people that and influencing people to do the things that they're doing, 60% of the Republicans going to believe him. So first of all, let's start with your so-called leaders. Second of all is that as Americans, we got to learn how to change our attitudes toward this disease, because that's what it's going to end up being. In the prison system, third of all, is where we really going to have to watch out. Cause it's
all right. What about thank you, Mitchell. Prisons, you would think that prisoners would be particularly vulnerable, and support personnel, closed, confined places, and if somebody were sick, they could transmit the disease. And we do have issues that are going to be challenges.
Absolutely. Like the general population, the young people probably will survive it. The older ones will have a harder time, particularly if they have secondary medical conditions. And then we've got to still look out for the guards and how we are protecting them and providing them the proper equipment so they can protect themselves. And we're doing the proper screening of the guards. On one way of hand, it could be the most dangerous place in the world. On the other hand, it could be one of the safer ones if we're screening the guards and making sure otherwise there's no way for it to get into the prison.
Yesterday I talked with Dr. Stan Mays, the father of Skylar Mays, the LSU basketball star. He has a practice on Gus Young Avenue, family practitioner, sole practitioner, too. He has 10,000 patients.
Wow.
10,000. And he sees over 30 patients a day. So if you do the math, that's about 8,000 to 10,000 a year that come in through the doors. And there's a guy who is vulnerable. He's a doctor. Our medical professionals, and his wife is his nurse and his business manager, our medical professionals are putting their lives at risk, too.
Every day. They took an oath, you know, to protect life, and they're standing up and they're doing their job, which means we're going to have to put a support system in to take care of them. And we know we've got a problem with equipment for them, and we may have to stand up support. Our governor has moved out with using his National Guard. They may be doing some of the testing. I don't know the task yet, but we need to help take care of our first responders as well as our nurses and doctors, because they are very vulnerable, because they are in contact with known people to have the virus, and they're going to have to, we're going to have to take care of them.
Trish in Lafayette. Trish, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I just want to say what a pleasure it is to hear exactly what we all needed to hear, which is put on our big person pants and get on with it. And, you know, and I just needed that pep talk. I'm a self-employed artist, so this is all a really very dicey situation. So my comment that I really wanted to make was, it seems to me that part of the issue is a basic lack of understanding of basic science and a lack of respect for basic science. This is not a matter of belief or unbelief. Science is science. And I think that's part of the issue that we are having in this world today.
General?
That was very well stated. Well stated.
Thank you, Trish.
Thank you, Ms. Trish, for sharing that this morning.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Hi, Patrick. Good morning to you.
Hey, my concern is, okay, they shut down the court system. You can't even, like, I can't even evict someone for 5 weeks, you know. I have to make money for a living. I don't work for the government, so I'm not guaranteed free tax money. I have to provide a service for people to make money. People that work in the restaurant industry, they have to work every day to make money so they can pay their rent, they can pay their bills. I mean, you know, people get killed on the road every day. Do we shut down the interstate because three people might get killed on the interstate today? No, we don't. We still need to move on and function. I understand this is a contagious flu, and three people have died so far that were already pretty unhealthy. I get it. We need to be cautious, but at the same time, people got to make a living, and we still got to live our lives. I mean, we can't just stop making money and working and think that some, you know, I don't work for government. Someone's just not going to magically pay my bills. I have to work for a living is what I'm getting at.
Well, I think a lot of Americans are waking up this morning with that similar position.
Well, the economy, of course, is going to respond negatively to this,
right.
And it has.
So we're all in this together. I mean, whether you're a small businessman or you own 10 yachts, we're all in this together. And the government is trying to work through some plan. But I would ask you to understand that the system is not picking on you because you're a small businessman and you can't get to court and you can't evict people. I think there'll be a system there that will be kicking in the next few days if the legislators get it right in Washington, that will be able to cover where you can continue to do business and not lose your business because of the impact of this virus. But I would ask you to lighten your heart up a little bit and show some empathy for that position and figure out ways to work with the government where you can keep those people and at the same time get paid, because business have to make money. I agree with you.
And the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the early going today is about even at 20,248. That's after a nearly 3,000-point drop yesterday, 13%. The Dow is almost exactly where it was when President Trump took office on January 20th, 2017. In his State of the Union address, which was just 6 weeks ago, 42 days ago, I don't think coronavirus was mentioned one time. And he said the Dow had gone up 70%. It had actually gone up 45% at that time. Now it's even on the heels of his predecessor having a 149% gain in 8 years. But there are some stocks that are responding well, as you can imagine. These are opportunities for some. Waiter, a Louisiana company that's had all kinds of financial trouble, it's now at 90 cents. That's a low stock price. But yesterday at this time it was at 32 cents. And it's at 90. So if you had $32,000 in Waiter yesterday, you got $90,000 now. So there are some stocks responding well despite these austere times. We're going to talk with a general, a man who's been there and done that. He's seen a lot, and it's just good to be in his presence because he's not a guy who's going to push any panic buttons. And he is a man who conveys authority and confidence that we'll get through this, and I'm sure we will. It's a matter of time. We just don't know how much time, and, of course, the uncertainty is often the biggest punishment. But there's no reason to be afraid because fear is not going to get us anywhere. 877-217-5757. We're going to go to the news and come back with General Honoré, and we'll get to some people who have been waiting patiently. Thank you for calling. We do have a line open. Again, 877-217-5757. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. And we'll be back after this brief timeout with the news from the impeccable Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Another few minutes with General Russell Honoré, the hero of Katrina for good reason, and now he's providing us with his wisdom for coronavirus. 877-217-5757. If you get a busy signal, we'll try to get to you. We do have some folks waiting to talk with General Russell Honoré. Yolanda Villarreal is producing, and let's go to Joe and Walker. Joe, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I heard several rumors that this is a biological virus created by China, and they have the solution to the virus. I thought General Honoré may be a credible person, may have heard these rumors.
Those rumors have been out there, and actually they have been perpetuated in one case by a U.S. Senator, Tom Cotton of Arkansas. But, General, I think if China had a solution to this, they would have used it because they were hit harder than anybody else.
Yeah, that was the logic, tell me. I have no faith in those rumors. And thank you for bringing that up, because we just need to remind people that we're going to get misinformation out there on social media, and that's where a lot of this come from. And but thanks for bringing the subject up. I do not believe that rumor, and I think we need to move on and take care of one another and practice those things the governors guide us and the CDC on what we need to do. But thanks for calling in, Joe.
Randy and Zachary. Hi, Randy. You're on Talk Louisiana with General Honoré. Hi, Randy.
Yes, I just want to make a comment now. In this day and age, our superior communications really make a difference, because think about what it was in 1919, what it was. So that's the plus factor. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, the world has changed. There weren't 30,000 flights, I think, in the U.S. alone every day, and most of those planes are nearly empty now. I can speak. I was on two flights Sunday, and people at airports are acting like people do at wartime. Very quiet, General. Very quiet.
It's going to do a culture, have a cultural shift in America. You know, we survived the first two world wars, and in between, you think we'd always be protected by our great oceans. Then 9/11 happened. That was a wake up call. The enemy came to us, and now this virus, we must treat it like an enemy, because if we're not vigilant, it will kill more of us. So listening to the recommendations coming from the government, I think we've got to be looking out for one another, stay home, protect our elderly, and don't panic, because the majority of people who do get it can survive if we can increase the number of ventilators and respirators. And we need to take care of the elderly and people with secondary conditions. But that increase in information, it can be a hindrance because rumors start that way. Make sure you're double-checking points of information before you act on it, and let's use the information we have for positive and not for negative.
All right. David in Atlanta. Hello, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's an honor to talk to you, General. You know, President Trump reminds me of General William Westmoreland when he said, prior to the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, peace is at hand. When the president says that anyone who wants to get tested can get tested, and this thing will go away like a miracle one day, it tells me that we have no confidence in our president, and to me that makes this crisis much more serious.
All right. But, General, I know you're not a big fan either of their president, but he is our president. And
He's the president we got.
He's the
one we
got
to ride it out. I think, thank God, we've got people like Dr. Fauci, and we've got great governors that are filling in the blank and making things happen. I don't argue with what the caller said. I think we need to move forward and do what we have to do to take care of our families and work with our mayors and governors as we work our way through this. And let's all try to find some solutions to the problems we face, because we've got an unknown enemy, an unknown location of where it's operating, mm-hmm. and an unknown distance on when it's going to leave. So we're going to have to work our way through this, and we're not going to always have the answers. And America will have to get over that, because we want the answers.
Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Henry, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, General Honore. Good morning, Mr. Jim. Of course, it's an honor to talk to both of y'all. We've seen Trump for the past few weeks sloughing responsibility. Anything that's negative, he puts it off on somebody else. We contrast it to our governor, John Bel Edwards, who at every one of his press conferences, you don't see him blame a soul. You see him say, this is where we are, this is where we need to be, this is what we've got to do to be there. I think we need to sit back, thank God that Louisiana elected our governor and his West Point training, who is getting us through this despite the federal officials.
Hallelujah. We got a good governor. He's doing a good job. We just got to work with him, because there's going to be some unknown days come down the road, and we're going to have to help him figure it out and take care of one another. I agree with you.
And the governor will be here tomorrow at 2 o'clock for his monthly show, Ask the Governor, so you have a chance to talk directly with Governor John Bel Edwards. Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Hi, Charlotte. You're on with General Honore.
Good morning. I'd like to thank you for letting me ask my question, and it is, have there been any reports of the virus being in the country of Russia or that area of the world? Thanks. Bye.
I'm not aware of any reports, but
I have not
Russia,
seen
as we know, is a closed society for the most part. And if there were cases, which I'm sure there are, it's in over 120 countries now. That's almost every country on the planet. I'm sure Russia is a large country that has some cases of coronavirus, but they handle things differently there. We live in a free society, which we treasure, and that's one of the great wonders of America. But at times like this, our freedom is something that we have to give up parts of it, and we have a real reluctance to do that, don't we, General?
When it comes to getting something done that is meaningful and will be enduring, it requires sacrifice, Jim and my fellow Americans. if we're going to get through this, we all need to be prepared to sacrifice. And it goes back from the evolution of our country. We're here today because there were men and women willing to stand up and put everything on their life, their lives on the line, to sacrifice their lives if needed to win our freedom, to retain our freedom in our lives here in America today. We are going to have to make great sacrifice. This is not going to be business as usual. And we need to get past that. And thank you, Ms. Charlotte, for calling that in. I have no idea what's going on in Russia.
Ellen in Sherwood Forest. Ellen, good morning. You're on the air with General Honore.
Good morning. Thank you, General Honore. Thank you, Jim. And I appreciate all of the good information that we've been getting to try to deal with this virus, like hand washing and not shaking hands and keeping social distance. But I think it's not doing us a service that we haven't been told exactly how to keep ourselves healthy enough to avoid or to deal with the virus. And that involves building up our immune systems and having the proper nutrition and vitamins. And that's really critically important, too. And I haven't heard enough doctors talking about that, unfortunately.
Well, thank you for bringing that to Jim's attention. I'm sure in the next couple of days he might bring a nutritionist on because he's got the flexibility to do it. But I think by you bringing this up, you know very well, ma'am, that we must encourage those around us to make sure we're eating a balanced diet and we're drinking a lot of water. That is going to be key to keeping people healthy. And thank you for bringing that topic up. But
right,
I think we know this information or we look it up online. And we'll follow up with you.
And if you can, take a walk. It's good to clear your head and to get some exercise. And that, of course, helps the immune system as well. Rashad on Segan Lane. Hi, Rashad. You're on with General Honore.
Hi. I just wanted to let you guys know that there's the CDC website, which does have a map of active corona cases. And Russia does have cases. I heard a caller call in earlier. Yeah.
How many are you seeing on that site?
The CDC site doesn't list numbers. It just lists countries.
Just lists Russia as a state or a country that is reported. Well, yeah, it would make sense. There's no way anybody gets out of this without cases. Now, most people will live. That we know. Janet in New Roads. Hi, Janet. You're on with the general. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. I've been thinking about our testing protocol, and we may be testing the wrong people. I think we should be testing doctors, nurses, healthcare professionals, nursing home attendants, skilled nursing facility, because those are the people that are going to have direct contact with our most vulnerable population. I think at this point it's too late. Everybody's pretty much going to get exposed. Most healthy and younger people are going to have a mild case. And what's the purpose in testing them? If they come up positive, what are you going to do? Are you going to contact trace everybody that they've been exposing the virus to? So I see at this point that the way to keep it out of the vulnerable population is to keep our healthcare professionals tested.
And I recognize this as Colonel Janet Humphreys, and I know in our conversation last week you had concerns that you might have it. Have you been tested?
No, I have not. And ironically enough, well, two things. My symptoms weren't bad enough, and I had no direct known contact with someone who had a CDC-verified case of COVID-19. My son, who lives in Seattle that I was visiting, called me last night and told me that his roommate's mother has tested positive.
Okay, we've got to go to a break. We'll spend a few more minutes with General Russell Honore, and we will return with more Talk Louisiana after this brief pause. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana, wrapping it up with General Russell Honore. And before we go to Emily Nimmons, who's an outstanding writer and has a rich history here in Baton Rouge in Louisiana, General, a few things. Colonel Humphreys, I know you wanted to respond to her statement.
Well, thank you for calling in. Thanks for Colonel Humphreys' service. And I do think as the expert live and learn through this virus, the idea of testing is still important because we need to identify healthy young people that are carrying the virus to isolate themselves or be quarantined. Because as with doctors, all the doctors are being temperature checked every day, which is a key indicator. But I can't disagree with anything the Colonel said, and thank you for your service.
And Mark on Olive wants to know the latest on the Baton Rouge aquifer. What is there any new development regarding your concerns that you've conveyed here and elsewhere many times?
Every day we wake up, we will see that the life expectancy of the aquifer is reduced because of the amount of water that is being used by industry. About 80% of the water in East Baton Rouge Parish is coming out of that aquifer going to industry. We've got to get that fixed. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. If we want to extend the life of the aquifer, because it will not replenish itself, there's a study going on by the Water Center with some professors that are associated with LSU, but we're just kicking the can down the road for the last 20 years. We need to get the industry in East Baton Rouge Parish to be like the industry in Iberville, Dow, and all those plants south of here and use river water. That is the only way we're going to extend the life of the aquifer.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, we have about 45 seconds with the general. You have the floor, Phil.
Oh, golly. We're not going to lose power, and we'll have our utilities, so if you shelter in home, you'll relatively have, be in comfort, so it won't be like going through a hurricane.
Right.
And let's do our civic duty and stay as healthy as we can so people who are really sick can use some resources that are going to get scarce.
Well said, sir.
Well, thank you, Phil. Thank you, General. It's always a pleasure, and even in difficult times, but we'll be calling on you again very soon. Appreciate it.
America, test, test, test.
There you go.
Thank you.
Now we're joined by Emily Nimmons. She is the editor of the Paris Review, previously the editor of the Southern Review at Louisiana State University, where she received a degree in creative writing, also studied art history and studio art at Brown University before she came south, and she's been involved in many matters and is now a novelist. Her debut novel is The Cactus League, just published in the last few days. And good morning to you, Emily, joining us from, I think, New York City. Hi, Emily.
Good morning, Jim.
Well,
I am in New York. I was supposed to be in Baton Rouge today, in fact, for a book event to celebrate the Cactus League. But alas, I am trying to do my part to flatten the curve from the East Village.
Well, times have changed, but I'm sure in New York it's much different now than it has been in most times. It's not the bustling city that it usually is it?
No, they've closed restaurants and bars. Now you can only get takeout or delivery. So, and of course, movie theaters, all sorts of theaters and live events and sporting events, any sort of large crowds have been banned. And I think, everyone's just trying to do their part to keep the community safe and healthy.
Well, I mentioned at LSU, you were the co-editor of the Southern Review, and you... Mm-hmm. You have this passion, in addition to literature, for sports and particular baseball, and that prompted The Cactus League, which is your debut novel, and much of it was composed right here in Baton Rouge. Tell us about this endeavor.
Absolutely. I moved down to Louisiana in 2011 for a graduate degree in creative writing at LSU, and I was trying to think about what could I write about for several years? What did I want my first book to be about? And I love baseball and always have. And coming to Louisiana and just seeing how big football culture and sports culture was down there was really inspiring and made me think about not just the sport of baseball, but communities around sports teams and how a community can be built and grow and be explored in fiction. And so I did a pretty deep dive into LSU football. I did a pretty deep dive into sports literature, everything from The Natural to books by Robert Coover that are a little bit more postmodern. to a lot of long-form reportage, and I built this world around spring training baseball in Arizona, which, you know, it's a real stadium in Scottsdale, Arizona, but I made up a team called the Los Angeles Lions, and the book is really about, you know, on its surface, it's about this one left fielder, their all-star gold glove best guy on the team named Jason Goodyear, but as the book unfolds, you see it's really about the whole community around Jason, the rest of his team, all the support staff, the front office, all of the fans, and building a community narrative around a team felt like a really interesting way to explore a moment in time, a sports team, why sports matter to so many of us.
Emily Nemens is our guest for a few more minutes. She is the editor of the Paris Review, quite an assignment going from the Southern Review to the Paris Review, and her debut novel is The Cactus League. She mentioned the main character, Jason Goodyear. Is he based on anybody that you have been exposed to?
You know, not exactly. I've been a baseball fan for 30 years, and my first love in the game was Ken Griffey Jr. I'm from Seattle originally, and he was, you know, a rookie when I was a little girl, and it was so exciting to watch this phenomenal young player really come into his own and be one of the best athletes in the game. So when I was trying to figure out who my star would be, of course I made him an outfielder. But beyond that, Jason's really an amalgamation of a lot of different athletes. I was interested in those athletes like Derek Jeter or Mike Trout, where on the surface, very sort of plain and flat and quiet. They seem to have calm. You know, they really just play the game, do it well, go home and sleep, then do it all again the next day. Of course, no one's that boring. No one has nothing going on except for their life on the field. Everyone has an interior life, has struggles, even millionaires, you know, and top athletes have challenges in their lives. And I was interested in exploring the possibilities of a character who might seem placid and calm on the surface, but really has some real intense personal struggles, and how those two existences might overlap and clash. So there wasn't one athlete, but, you know, reading about both athletes that have had very healthy and calm home lives and personal existences, but then also reading about athletes that have had very public ruptures and thinking about, you know, Pete Rose and his gambling, thinking about other athletes who have, you know, had to come back from really challenging personal experiences and how that might play out across a novel was really helpful.
And another left fielder who dealt with some problems, perhaps the greatest player in the history of the game, Barry Lamar Bonds. But the Cactus League is from Emily Nemens, and she certainly treasures her time in Baton Rouge and is co-editor of the Southern Review, the publication founded by Robert Penn Warren. You went to New York and wowed them and got the job as the editor of the Paris Review, and this is quite an accomplishment, and I'm sure that you, in your own way, may have been surprised that you got chosen, but there you are, and I hear you're doing great work.
Well, thank you. We just won the National Magazine Award for Fiction a few weeks ago, which was really exciting. And we've always sort of been the bridesmaid, never the bride, and not often a finalist for that award. It is a big job, of course, but, you know, the Southern Review and the Paris Review are really peer publications in a lot of ways. They were started in the middle of the century by very ambitious young writers and editors who wanted to change the game and did that by publishing the best contemporary fiction, poetry, and other things that they could find. The Southern Review had this emphasis on criticism from the beginning that is absent and not a part of the Paris Review. The Paris Review chose instead to think about writers at work interviews. And so that's sort of been our calling card from the beginning. But that's all to say, I had a really great, I didn't think of it as training at the time. I thought the Southern Review was my career and was really poured my heart and soul into that magazine. But the Parish Review is, you know, the largest literary quarterly in the country, and it was just such a wonderful and, yes, slightly surprising opportunity to get the call to come up from Louisiana to do it. But it's going great. You know, I've gotten my team remote this last week. Everyone's been working from home, and everyone's safe. And I'm really grateful that we're able to continue to share literature with readers, particularly in a moment where I think people could use the diversion and use a bit of art.
Well, I think people will treasure these sorts of things now more than ever. A listener notes that one of the founders of the Parish Review was a fellow synonymous with sport, George Plimpton, and Emily Nimmons. We've got a roll, but congratulations on the Cactus League, her debut novel, available in many places now, and we look forward to a visit again soon. Congratulations.
Thank you, Jim.
Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.